Franco-British Chamber of Commerce and Industry, Diploma in Business English, Autumn 2005.
Do not open the paper yet. There are 5 passages in total. You will hear each passage twice. You will have time to read the questions before hearing the passage for the first time. There will be a pause between the first and second readings and after the second reading. You may take notes and write your answers at any time. After the second reading of the final passage, you will have some time to finish your work. If you have any questions, please ask now. You may open your paper now.
Passage 1. You now have time to read the questions.
Here is passage 1 for the first time.
Hello, Mike Thackwell speaking.
Oh, Mike, it's Sarah. I'm glad I've caught you before you leave.
That's not difficult this evening. I'm going to be here until at least 9 p.m. I'm working on the Croatian tender offer. It's got to be sent in on Friday.
Right, well, I won't keep you long, I promise. It's about the advertising rates for World Trends magazine you faxed me earlier on. I think my fax machine is almost out of ink because some of the text is patchy. Could I just check a few details?
All right. Got it. So what exactly isn't clear?
Well, first of all, what's the price of a full-page ad in color?
A full-page ad in color is €2,500, excluding VAT.
Okay. €2,500 for color and €2,000 for a full-page ad in black and white. And what about a half-page in color? Is it about 1,820?
No. It's 1,328 for color and 1,060 for a half page in black and white.
Right. Then a quarter page ad in color is €682, and in black and white that would be...
€546.
Okay. And what are the figures for format D? An eighth of a page in color and in black and white?
€368 for color and €295 for black and white.
Right. I've got all the prices straight. But what does it say underneath the table? I can't decipher that at all.
There it explains the further reductions they offer if you place several ads in a row. For 3 consecutive ads, 10%. For 5 consecutive ads, 15%. And if you place an ad in all 12 monthly issues, you get a 20% discount.
Okay, that's great. I'll have a look at what budget we may have, and then I'll get back to you. Will tomorrow afternoon be okay?
That's fine. But we've only got another 8 days before the closing date for the January 2006 issue.
Okay, I'll be as quick as I can.
Thanks, Sarah.
Right. I'll let you get back to your tender offer then. Bye.
Bye, Sarah.
Here is passage 1 for the second time.
Hello, Mike Thackwell speaking.
Ah, Mike, it's Sarah. I'm glad I've caught you before you leave.
That's not difficult this evening. I'm going to be here until at least 9 p.m. I'm working on the Croatian tender offer. It's got to be sent in on Friday.
Right, well, I won't keep you long, I promise. It's about the advertising rates for World Trends magazine you faxed me earlier on. I think my fax machine is almost out of ink because some of the text is patchy. Could I just check a few details?
All right. Got it. So what exactly isn't clear?
Well, first of all, what's the price of a full-page ad in color?
A full-page ad in color is €2,500, excluding VAT.
Okay. €2,500 for color and €2,000 for a full-page ad in black and white. And what about a half-page in color? Is it about 1,820?
No, it's 1,328 for color and 1,060 for a half page in black and white.
Right. Then a quarter page ad in colour is €682, and in black and white that would be...
€546.
Okay. And what are the figures for format D? An eighth of a page in colour and in black and white?
€368 for colour and €295 for black and white.
Right. I've got all the prices straight. But what does it say underneath the table? I can't decipher that at all.
There it explains the further reductions they offer if you place several ads in a row. For three consecutive ads, 10%. For five consecutive ads, 15%. And if you place an ad in all 12 monthly issues, you get a 20% discount.
Okay, that's great. I'll have a look at what budget we may have, and then I'll get back to you. Will tomorrow afternoon be okay?
That's fine, but we've only got another 8 days before the closing date for the January 2006 issue.
Okay, I'll be as quick as I can.
Thanks, Sarah.
Right. I'll let you get back to your tender offer then. Bye.
Bye, Sarah.
Passage 2. You now have time to read the questions. Here is passage 2 for the first time.
The summer sales on Oxford Street. Normally the second busiest time of the year on London's liveliest shopping street. Only according to retail experts, since the bomb attacks in July, the number of shoppers has dwindled and spending is down. The retail tracking agency, RTA, found that the number of people out shopping this week was 20% lower than this time last year. Some of the figures concern tourists. They spend around $25 billion a year in the capital. That's nearly a fifth of the UK's economic output. This is Helen Dudley from the tourist group Visit Britain. Helen, do you think the bomb attacks could make tourists nervous about visiting Britain?
Well, Jeremy, it was estimated that some 31 million visitors were going to visit the UK this year. The attacks means that there might be 500,000 less, which is only a 2% drop. As a consequence, tourist spending in Britain could fall by about $575 million this year.
Along with tourism and consumer spending, there are also concerns that London could lose some of its allure for foreign investors. I asked James Peach, the managing director of the Centre for Economic and Business Research, how worried he is about the impact of the bombs on direct investment here in the UK.
At the moment, the chances of it having an impact on direct investment are slim. But if it continues into the long term, then clearly one has to start to worry about the direct investment that is coming into London, the Southeast, and the rest of the UK. But this isn't the first time central London has suffered terrorist attacks. We've been through this before. Nevertheless, the city is thriving.
It certainly is. And all over the world, people have been saying that the resilience of Londoners is really quite remarkable.
That's true. but I think we need to watch closely the impact of these events on the UK economy generally, and in particular on retail sales and consumer confidence. This comes at a particularly tough time, because although retail figures bounced back in June, they have been rather weak since the beginning of the year.
The Harrods, which obviously has a lot of tourists, and John Lewis, which is a popular destination for domestic shoppers, both report the figures are only slightly down.
Indeed, over the past couple of weeks, there has been a lot of contradictory information coming out. I don't think we'll get a really clear picture for another few weeks or even months. But there is evidence from some of the footfall analysts that suggests that the number of pedestrians around the shopping areas, particularly in central London, has declined since the bombings.
Here is passage 2 for the second time.
The summer sales on Oxford Street. Normally the second busiest time of the year on London's liveliest shopping street. Only, according to retail experts, since the bomb attacks in July, the number of shoppers has dwindled and spending is down. The retail tracking agency, RTA, found that the number of people out shopping this week was 20% lower than this time last year. Some of the figures concern tourists. They spend around $25 billion a year in the capital. That's nearly a fifth of the UK's economic output. This is Helen Dudley from the tourist group Visit Britain. Helen, do you think the bomb attacks could make tourists nervous about visiting Britain?
Well, Jeremy, it was estimated that some 31 million visitors were going to visit the UK this year. The attacks means that there might be 500,000 less, which is only a 2% drop. As a consequence, tourist spending in Britain could fall by about $575 million this year.
Along with tourism and consumer spending, there are also concerns that London could lose some of its allure for foreign investors. I asked James Peach, the managing director of the Centre for Economic and Business Research, how worried he is about the impact of the bombs on direct investment here in the UK.
At the moment, the chances of it having an impact on direct investment are slim. But if it continues into the long term, then clearly one has to start to worry about the direct investment that is coming into London, the South East, and the rest of the UK. But this isn't the first time central London has suffered terrorist attacks. We've been through this before. Nevertheless, the city is thriving.
It certainly is. And all over the world, people have been saying that the resilience of Londoners is really quite remarkable.
That's true. But I think we need to watch closely the impact of these events on the UK economy generally, and in particular on retail sales and consumer confidence. This comes at a particularly tough time, because although retail figures bounced back in June, they have been rather weak since the beginning of the year.
The Harrods, which obviously has a lot of tourists, and John Lewis, which is a popular destination for domestic shoppers, both report the figures are only slightly down.
Indeed, over the past couple of weeks, there has been a lot of contradictory information coming out. I don't think we'll get a really clear picture for another few weeks or even months. But there is evidence from some of the footfall analysts that suggests that the number of pedestrians around the shopping areas, particularly in central London, has declined since the bombings.
Passage 3. You now have time to read the questions. Here is passage 3 for the first time.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Tony. How are you both?
Fine, great.
How are you enjoying your new job at Klein Consulting, Tony?
I'm loving it. We've got some really interesting clients.
And what about you, Mike? Is that manager of yours still making your life hell?
Yeah, she is, unfortunately. But the good news is that she'll be retiring in a couple of months' time. What about you, Anna? Still at Reichmann's?
Yes, I'm still there, but I don't know for how much longer.
Ah, what makes you say that?
Well, I found out yesterday that the firm has been operating under Chapter 11 bankruptcy regulations for the past 3 months, whatever that means.
What it means is that the firm is having financial difficulties, but it's trying to solve them. Chapter 11 is a form of interim bankruptcy that allows an ailing company to seek protection from creditors while it sorts out its problems. The company is allowed to continue operating while shedding some of its liabilities, such as debts or financial obligations to a corporate pension fund, for example. The purpose of Chapter 11 is supposed to be to avoid the unnecessary liquidation of a business, as well as the redundancies and total loss to creditors that this can entail.
Well, I sincerely hope they'll manage to turn the business around. There are over 350 employees working here in the New York office alone.
It's a good thing that they filed for bankruptcy before the tougher new rules come into force this autumn. I read an article on the subject just this morning. Apparently, ailing firms won't be treated with such leniency in the future. For example, whereas companies used to have unlimited time to file a reorganization plan, they will now only have 18 months to do so. The government is also clamping down on pay-to-stay bonuses for managers. Whereas before, key employees would have been offered generous bonuses to stick around through the reorganization, from now on, managers will only get limited retention pay and only if they have received job offers that pay at least as much. There will also be better protection for a firm's suppliers. Until now, suppliers that shipped goods to a business just before it filed for bankruptcy had little chance of getting their goods or their money back. But now, suppliers that ship goods within 20 days of a filing will get paid in full or will be able to reclaim the goods.
Anyway, don't worry, Anna. If your firm does go under, I'm sure that a talented young woman like you will be snapped up by another one in no time.
Well, I sincerely hope so. Right, maybe we should order lunch or we'll never get out of here by 2 o'clock.
True. I think I'll go for the spare ribs.
Here is passage 3 for the second time.
Hi, Mike. Hi, Tony. How are you both?
Fine, great.
How are you enjoying your new job at Klein Consulting, Tony?
I'm loving it. We've got some really interesting clients.
And what about you, Mike? Is that manager of yours still making your life hell?
Yeah, she is, unfortunately. But the good news is that she'll be retiring in a couple of months' time. What about you, Anna? Still at Reichmann's?
Yes, I'm still there, but I don't know for how much longer.
Ah, what makes you say that?
Well, I found out yesterday that the firm has been operating under Chapter 11 bankruptcy regulations for the past 3 months, whatever that means.
What it means is that the firm is having financial difficulties, but it's trying to solve them. Chapter 11 is a form of interim bankruptcy that allows an ailing company to seek protection from creditors while it sorts out its problems. The company is allowed to continue operating while shedding some of its liabilities, such as debts or financial obligations to a corporate pension fund, for example. The purpose of Chapter 11 is supposed to be to avoid the unnecessary liquidation of a business, as well as the redundancies and total loss to creditors that this can entail.
Well, I sincerely hope they'll manage to turn the business around. There are over 350 employees working here in the New York office alone.
It's a good thing that they filed for bankruptcy before the tougher new rules come into force this autumn. I read an article on the subject just this morning. Apparently, ailing firms won't be treated with such leniency in the future. For example, whereas companies used to have unlimited time to file a reorganization plan, they will now only have 18 months to do so. The government is also clamping down on pay-to-stay bonuses for managers. Whereas before, key employees would have been offered generous bonuses to stick around through the reorganization, from now on, managers will only get limited retention pay and only if they have received job offers that pay at least as much. There will also be better protection for a firm's suppliers. Until now, suppliers that shipped goods to a business just before it filed for bankruptcy had little chance of getting their goods or their money back. But now, suppliers that ship goods within 20 days of a filing will get paid in full or will be able to reclaim the goods.
Anyway, don't worry, Anna. If your firm does go under, I'm sure that a talented young woman like you will be snapped up by another one in no time.
Oh, well, I sincerely hope so. Right. Maybe we should order lunch, or we'll never get out of here by 2 o'clock.
True. I think I'll go for the spare ribs.
Passage 4. You now have time to read the questions. Here is passage 4 for the first time.
Hello, Christine. How are things?
Oh, hello, Rupert. Not so good, actually. It looks like we're going to have to wind up the business. There are just too many car accessory retailers in the area. Competition is cutthroat and has really pushed down prices. I think we've got to face up to the fact that we've failed.
Well, you'll have to just look at it as a learning experience. I've just been reading a book by the economist Paul Ormerod called Why Most Things Fail. He argues that we can actually learn quite a lot from failure. Listen to this. Failure is all around us. Failure is pervasive. Failure is everywhere, across time, across place, and across different aspects of life. 99.9% of all biological species that have ever existed are now extinct. More than 10% of all the companies in America disappear each year.
Don't! You're making me feel even more depressed than I already am.
But it's true. Like the Austrian economist Friedrich Hayek, Ormerod believes that the economy is constantly evolving and adapting to change. The fittest don't survive without many falling by the wayside. It's what Joseph Schumpeter called the process of creative destruction.
I can't see anything creative about closing down a business you've just spent 5 years growing and which has eaten up all your personal savings.
Ah, but adaptation doesn't necessarily mean that firms go out of business. Look what happened when Roca-Cola changed the taste of its cola drink 20 years ago. Customers hated it, the company got the worst publicity in its history, and it was forced to withdraw the drink a few months later. The company adapted, albeit with its tail between its legs. This is how markets work. Contrast that with a centrally planned system in which the state monopoly drinks producer changes its recipe. Customers would have no alternative but to buy the drink, even though they found it inferior. In this case, failure would go unchallenged, and the loser would, of course, be the consumer.
Okay, I see your point, but at the moment I feel like the loser. Maybe I should use my experience to write a business book. How about How to Fail at Business Without Really Trying? Do you think that would sell?
No, I doubt it. But look, you're already starting to think positively.
Here is passage 4 for the second time.
Hello, Christine. How are things?
Oh, hello, Rupert. Not so good, actually. It looks like we're going to have to wind up the business. There are just too many car accessory retailers in the area. Competition is cutthroat and has really pushed down prices. I think we've got to face up to the fact that we've failed.
Well, you'll have to just look at it as a learning experience. I've just been reading a book by the economist Paul Ormerod called Why Most Things Fail. He argues that we can actually learn quite a lot from failure. Listen to this. Failure is all around us. Failure is pervasive. Failure is everywhere, across time, across place, and across different aspects of life. 99.9% of all biological species that have ever existed are now extinct. More than 10% of all the companies in America disappear each year.
Don't! You're making me feel even more depressed than I already am.
But it's true. Like the Austrian economist Friedrich Hayek, Ormerod believes that the economy is constantly evolving and adapting to change. The fittest don't survive without many falling by the wayside. It's what Joseph Schumpeter called the process of creative destruction.
I can't see anything creative about closing down a business you've just spent 5 years growing and which has eaten up all your personal savings.
Ah, but adaptation doesn't necessarily mean that firms go out of business. Look what happened when Roca-Cola changed the taste of its cola drink 20 years ago. Customers hated it, the company got the worst publicity in its history, and it was forced to withdraw the drink a few months later. The company adapted, albeit with its tail between its legs. This is how markets work. Contrast that with a centrally planned system in which the state monopoly drinks producer changes its recipe. Customers would have no alternative but to buy the drink, even though they found it inferior. In this case, failure would go unchallenged, and the loser would, of course, be the consumer.
Okay, I see your point, but at the moment I feel like the loser. Maybe I should use my experience to write a business book. How about How to Fail at Business Without Really Trying? Do you think that would sell?
No, I doubt it. But look, you're already starting to think positively.
Passage 5. You now have time to read the questions. Here is passage 5 for the first time.
So, Mr. Van Helsing, what do you think about the current landscape of the mining industry?
I'm very optimistic that the strong demand for commodities, which we've seen over the past 12 months, will continue this year.
And having ridden the bounce in metal prices last year, you have just reported a 61% leap in earnings to $2.22 billion. You must be feeling under pressure to return cash to your shareholders.
Yes, it's only right that our shareholders should benefit from the buoyancy in the market, and as you probably know, we are hiking our dividends by 20%.
Yes, but even so, some investors are expressing disappointment that you aren't offering more cash. And over the past few days, there has been speculation that you might be preparing to bid for rival miner BMC. Would you like to comment on that?
No, I don't want to comment on that at all. All I can say is that our firm's healthy results leave us significant financial flexibility in the event of us finding an opportunity we would like to pursue.
And are you implying that you are leaving room in your balance sheet to take over that player?
Now, I think you're trying to draw me on something I'd rather not comment on.
I'm not trying to draw you specifically on BMC, but whether you feel that the mining industry is about to become more active as regards M&A.
Well, the industry has already been active to some degree. There's been consolidation, especially among some of the smaller players. At Pinto, we go through the process of reviewing possible acquisitions continually. Nothing's changed, and you can be sure that we're always looking for value-creating opportunities. We're fortunate to have had a real suite of organic growth opportunities, and certainly we're pursuing those. Over the next few years, we envisage having the scope to spend something like $6 to $8 billion on projects. Now, that's a very healthy growth portfolio in front of us.
It is indeed. Thank you for your comments, Mr. Van Helsing.
Here is passage 5 for the second time.
So, Mr. Van Helsing, what do you think about the current landscape of the mining industry?
I'm very optimistic that the strong demand for commodities, which we've seen over the past 12 months, will continue this year.
And having ridden the bounce in metal prices last year, you have just reported a 61% leap in earnings to $2.22 billion. You must be feeling under pressure to return cash to your shareholders.
Yes, it's only right that our shareholders should benefit from the buoyancy in the market, and as you probably know, we are hiking our dividends by 20%.
Yes, but even so, some investors are expressing disappointment that you aren't offering more cash. And over the past few days, there has been speculation that you might be preparing to bid for rival miner BMC. Would you like to comment on that?
No, I don't want to comment on that at all. All I can say is that our firm's healthy results leave us significant financial flexibility in the event of us finding an opportunity we would like to pursue.
And are you implying that you are leaving room in your balance sheet to take over that player?
Now, I think you're trying to draw me on something I'd rather not comment on.
I'm not trying to draw you specifically on BMC, but whether you feel that the mining industry is about to become more active as regards M&A.
Well, the industry has already been active to some degree. There's been consolidation, especially among some of the smaller players. At Pinto, we go through the process of reviewing possible acquisitions continually. Nothing's changed, and you can be sure that we're always looking for value-creating opportunities. We're fortunate to have had a real suite of organic growth opportunities, and certainly we're pursuing those. Over the next few years, we envisage having the scope to spend something like $6 to $8 billion on projects. Now, that's a very healthy growth portfolio in front of us.
It is indeed. Thank you for your comments, Mr. Van Helsing.